البيان راديو بريزنتس The Pharmacy Hour with Saeed Kadari from Your Discount Chemist.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم brothers and sisters and welcome to The Pharmacy Hour. We are live from البيان راديو Studios. I am Abu Abdurrahman. We do have our special guest with us in the studio, Brother Saeed Kadari, pharmacist from Your Discount Chemist. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Saeed.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
It's good to have you with us once again. We have an action-packed program today. We're going to speak about travel health or health and travel. Travel and health. Why this topic? Why is it important?
Well, we lots of us plan holidays. You know, we get excited about them. We're going somewhere. You know, it's important once you get there or before you get there, you're healthy. You don't want to ruin your holiday, and put a dampener on the whole trip. So, you know, I thought this would be a good, especially this time of year, as you said, you know, we're all, you know, starting to get ready, end of school, and starting to plan our end of year trips for some of us.
Some plan a getaway, some go visit family overseas, exactly. If they're originally from another country.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
So it's actually a perfect topic, perfect timing.
So yeah, so I thought we'd cover some of the, main points about traveling and staying healthy. The first one of the major things that we do, I mean, well, I'm probably concentrate more on overseas travel, although a lot of this doesn't always apply to domestic things, but, you know, we could apply them to them as well. But vaccinations, we'll touch on that first. And, you know, how they work. So vaccinating or immunization, it's simple, safe, and very effective way of protecting children, adults from harmful diseases before we, you know, come in contact with them. They estimate that vaccinations at the moment save about 3 million lives, worldwide per year.
So how do they work? Just if you don't mind me asking, how does the vaccination actually work?
Okay, so basically the vaccine uses the body's natural defense mechanism, what we call the immune response, and this builds resistance to specific viral infections. So in the vaccine, you have like a little bit of the virus that you're trying to protect yourself from, and what happens, it gets injected, and then the person's body produces an immune response in the same way the body would after a disease. So, you know, it starts to fight it, this little piece of vaccine that's been injected, but it's so little that what happens is the body fights it and it recognizes it, and so it stores it. It knows for next time it sees it, it kills it.
SubhanAllah.
SubhanAllah. That's how it works, and it does this without the person getting many symptoms at all. So then, you know, exactly. So when the person comes in contact with the disease in the future, the immune system recognizes it, and it's fast enough to prevent the person getting the disease. That's basically, you know, how it works.
Now, kids early on, they have to take a certain amount of vaccines, don't they? Or vaccinations?
Yes, the kids, there's a variety of vaccines that they need to take. And, you know, there's, hepatitis B and tetanus and pertussis and things like that. And the thing to remember with immunization, it's not just the child who's getting immunized. I mean, it's not just them benefiting, if all the kids get vaccinated, then it reduces the opportunity for people to start passing disease to one another and all the kids getting it, especially young babies who, you know, can't be fully immunized.
Yeah, immunization is a must now for a kid to go to school, isn't that right?
Yes, it is, yes. Although I think there's a few cracks in the system, I think.
There is a movement against, or the anti-vaccination, or the anti-immunization movement.
There is. Okay, I'll give you... I'll give you both sides of it, you know, why people, the fours and the against. So the anti-vaccination movement, okay, these guys I shouldn't say that in a bad way or anything.
Yeah, we know
what you
mean.
Excuse me, listeners.
Yeah, yeah. That's all right.
But, these, you know, people who are opposed, they are opposed for one main reason, that the vaccine may cause a negative immune reaction that triggers autism. This is something that is, you know, when you speak to the people who are anti-vaccines, this is their main purpose. It causes autism. So autism was quite rare in the early 1980s, before the childhood vaccines became pretty widespread. So in the US, autism used to be one in every 10,000 births. By the late 1990s, after, you know, the kids started getting immunized, that had increased from one in every 10,000 births. Now it's one in every 500. So, you know, it's not specifically because of vaccines, but autism has, you know, really increased a lot. And we don't know exactly why. The results of a small study by a doctor called Dr. Andrew Wakefield linking mercury in MMR, which is a type of vaccine, with stomach orders, that's a kid's vaccine, MMR, measles, mumps, and rubella, it's called, it linked it with autism and stomach disorders. That was one of the first publications that tried to link vaccination with autism, and it was published in The Lancet, which is a really mashhur, as they say in Arabic, it was really like a well-known medical journal. But it was later found that it was fraudulent and his results were inconclusive, and it was because that this Dr. Wakefield had a financial interest in a patent for another alternative MMR vaccine. This was so that he was found to be proven a liar, but the results from that study still get used by people now that it causes autism. It causes, even though it was false, but it's still the main cause of people bringing up why they don't want to vaccinate. Now, for the people who are pro-vaccination, the argument is strong. It's strong. According to UNICEF, the under five mortality rate, so the rate of under fives dying, has dropped by 41% since 1990, which is huge, and that's thought to be largely due to the increase of immunization in underdeveloped worlds and so forth, especially against polio and measles. Yeah, so you know, these are what we're, you know, weighing up. Now, of course, look, vaccines, they can have side effects. You know, the main problem from vaccines is that they stimulate the immune reaction. So, you know, you're going to get allergic type action, things like, you know, fevers, or sometimes you're going to get redness or stinging or a bit of pain on the site. These are just normal, you know, immune reactions. Sometimes they can cause, in a very tiny percentage of people, they can have permanent injury or death. It's not something that they try to hide. The statistics are there every time you vaccinate your child. But the risks outweigh the benefits of not having these, you know, diseases prevalent in the community. Because, you know, the more people who don't vaccinate, the more unsafe the population is. Because it spreads, everything spreads so quickly.
Now, before we move on, I'd like to ask you about, you know, since a lot of our listeners are from the Middle East, what are some vaccinations when someone is going to the Middle East? What should they take?
Okay, so the basic immunizations for the Middle East would be tetanus and diphtheria. Just make sure they're up to date. Tetanus, you know, just to make sure that, you know, you don't get anything stuck in you. You know, you run into some steel or something. That's where tetanus, you know, you run into a nail or something like that. Okay. Or something splits the skin. Also, hepatitis A and typhoid should be considered depending on where you're going. I personally tend to recommend them for most places because they're found in you know, like if you wash water and things like that, you can get hepatitis, you can get typhoid. And hepatitis A is something, virus that affects the liver, which is always good to take as well. And if you're going to Saudi Arabia for Hajj or Umrah, you need meningitis.
What is meningitis?
Meningitis is a infection of the brain lining. So it's the lining of the brain has it's got a thin lining on the brain, and it's when that gets infected or inflamed.
Now, what's the difference between hepatitis A and B?
Hepatitis A and B. Okay, so hepatitis A is the viral disease of the liver, and it's transmitted through eating contaminated food or drinking contaminated water. So again, popular, good to take if you good to get vaccinated if you're going overseas, especially to a third world or someone not as a country not as developed as Australia. It is the most common vaccine preventable disease that occurs to travelers in less developed areas of the world, and is strongly recommended for traveling to the Middle East. So again, I tend to always recommend this. Hepatitis B is a viral disease of the liver that is transmitted via blood products or bodily fluids. It is a vaccine preventable, and now it's part of the child immunization schedule. So most of the kids have got it, but not all the adults. So, you know, if you're an adult, you may have missed this if you didn't get to school, depending on how old you are, if you didn't get it at school. And travel is it's always a good reason just to get it updated.
You mentioned typhoid. What's typhoid? Did I pronounce it right?
Typhoid, yeah.
Typhoid.
Yes. Typhoid is...
Android?
Android, yeah, no. Are you Apple or Android, man? Just a veer off topic.
Well, how about I show you my phone and you can work it out. What do you reckon?
Oh, nice. Samsung boy. Yes. Yeah, Android. Yeah. I'm with you. Yeah, to all those Apple users out there.
The last few days have been a joke. See people lining up for 3-4 days for the iPhone X.
Yes.
What do you reckon?
Well, I'm being hassled by my daughter to get her one. These kids. But Apple...
to your daughters. It's very hard,
No, I'm all right. I can do it. Bit of tough love. I'm not too bad at tough love.
If she's listening, it's coming soon, inshallah. Surprise. Only cost a few grand, but worth
I have to go to do some overtime at the shop. Okay, so the typhoid fever is caused by bacteria found in contaminated food and water. And it's it's found in the developing world. And vaccination is recommended for travellers to all areas where environmental sanitation or personal hygiene may be poor. So rural areas and things like that. The adventurous eater venturing off the beaten track should consider vaccination as well.
When I went overseas, that's the first warning I got. Don't eat from the street vendors, if that's the right term.
Yes.
Eat in restaurants. Especially with the pollution, back in my day when I was traveling.
Where was this at?
I'm not going to mention the country. I don't upset anybody. There's a few, actually.
Yeah, well, the problem is you find that we, you know, being born and raised in Australia, we don't have the same, you know, we can't handle as much as maybe our parents or that kind of thing. And that's purely because the body, like we discussed with the vaccine, when you receive part of a disease in this vaccine, your body gets used to it, you know, fights it, sees it, remembers it for the next time. So, you know, if you live in these countries, a lot of the time these things don't even cause you a problem. Tetanus.
What is that?
Tetanus is caused by a toxin released by a common dust or soil bacteria, which enters the body through a wound. Most commonly, okay. you know, around now in Australia, it happens when, you know, you get a nail through your finger or tradies, you know, those kind of things. But, you know, again, when you're traveling overseas, especially, the last thing you want to do is try to visit a hospital overseas. Yes. You know, you want to avoid that at all costs.
Question. I want to travel. I want to go overseas. When should I have these vaccines?
Okay, that's good. Good question. Generally, we want to have them at least 2 to 3 weeks before you travel. You know, plan properly. You need that for the antibodies to build up, so they're ready to go once you get overseas. So yeah, so 2 to 3 weeks. A lot of these things need to be kept in the fridge when you know, so you'd see the doctor, get a prescription, and you go to the chemist and get them. You need to keep them in the fridge until you see the doctor.
Now, these are bought from the chemist and taken to the doctor.
Yes. The chemist, most of them. Sometimes the doctor will be able to give them to you straight there. The tetanus, generally the doctor will have there himself or themselves. But the other ones, generally from the pharmacist, if once you get a prescription.
Excellent. Jazakallah khair, Brother Saeed. We are going to take our first break for tonight on the Pharmacy Hour. Please stay with us and we'll be back very shortly. Bi-idhnillahi ta'ala. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
بالأمل والشوق جينا وفي سما الصقعت لينا وما نزع الوالدينا لن ننشر الخير غاية بالأمل والشوق جينا وفي سما الصقعت لينا وما نزع الوالدينا لن ننشر الخير غاية المكارم والمروة هي غذاء روح الأخوة ديننا ونهج النبوة قال نشر الخير غاية بالعمل والجد نكده وكل كلمة حق نصدح خلي من يهجو ويمدح دام نشر الخير غاية دام نشر الخير غاية Oh
صديقي أمنياتك فيها تغيير حياتك بس أحفظ ذكرياتك لأن حفظ العهد غاية حاول وحاول تجمل اصبر ولازم تحمل انت لو تجلس تأمل تعرف ان الخير غاية تعرف ان الخير غاية لو تقاسمنا المواجع كل ما سالت مدامة وما حصل بعد موادة وصار نشر الخير غاية يا جماعة أصدقاكم فيه بيبين وفاكم كأنهم صاروا معاكم صار نشر الخير غاية صار نشر الخير غاية
صدقات لينا وما نزعل والدينا لأن نشر الخير غاية بالأمل والشوق جينا وفي سما الصدقات لينا وما نزعل والدينا لأن نشر الخير غاية.
Assalamu alaikum, brothers and sisters. Jazakumullah khair for being with us on the Pharmacy Hour. I am Abu Abdurrahman and I'm pleased to be joined by my dear brother Saeed Qadari from Your Discount Chemist in Greenacre. We are discussing travel and health. Now, traveler's diarrhea is our next point of discussion. This is something that's quite common, isn't it, during travel?
Hugely common. Hugely common.
Why?
I don't want to get graphic.
No, graphic.
Have you ever,
no graphics.
Ever suffered from it?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's not a something nice to have.
No, and it can be dangerous if left untreated. Definitely can be dangerous. And you know in places like, you know, refugee camps and things where bugs can be spread and kids, especially kids or the elderly, get, you know, a diarrhea from, you know, cholera. You've probably heard of cholera. I don't know if you've ever heard of cholera. Cholera is like a disease that gives you diarrhea basically, and you can die from it. Yeah, because you lose too much water. Travel diarrhea, this is the one, most travelers to the developing countries experience sooner or later with watery diarrhea, sometimes vomiting included with it. And it's caused by bacteria such as E. coli, Salmonella, and it's treated with rehydration. If it's really bad, you can use an antibiotic called norfloxacin to treat it, but that's something you would need to get before you left.
Now, I know we discussed this during the series we had on myths, truths and myths regarding medicine.
Yes, I miss those ones.
The good old 7-Up. Does that actually help? Lemonade drink, does that actually help during diarrhea?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. I think Nawef wanted to believe that it did.
Brother Nawef on the Rewind Brother team. Nawef,
yeah, I think he wanted to believe.
Listen, did your parents give it to you when you were younger?
Honestly, I don't remember. But people...
It was widespread.
Yeah. I remember at university they would teach us that, look, lemonade doesn't work, even though people will tell you it works. It's like this, you know, old wives' tale, as they say.
What about the, you know, don't eat any fats and oils, just have toasted bread and potatoes...
Yeah, limiting, you can go with bland foods initially, but there's no need to stop yourself. So, you know, if you're hungry, eat a little bit. There's no real need to rest the stomach. But you can try the bland foods initially, especially like the rice and potatoes and bread and biscuits. But it's the dairy food, really.
Keep away from that.
Yeah, not too much. You can have it, just not too much of it. Don't go drinking half a liter of milk. Or something spicy, because spicy can also make a bit of diarrhea as well if you're not careful. Or something really fatty. But you can have them, just not, you know. Don't go eat KFC.
Please.
Don't go drink half a liter of milk, you know, and don't go having the hottest curry you've ever had. And you should be right. Just eat normally. You'll be fine.
Inshallah.
So the other thing that you can get while traveling is Giardia.
Giardia.
It's and this is like a name. Yeah. This is like a what we call a protozoa. It's just like a similar, a bit bigger than a bacteria. It's like a bug. We'll call it a bug. And it's actually found quite commonly in tap water in many cities around the world, as well as river water and contaminated food. This one can give you trouble that can drag on and on. So this one is like a bug that can really stay in your system for quite a while.
Just won't go.
It just won't go. sometimes long after returning home, and cramping, stomach pain, wind, all of these, like, you know, burping a lot, all these kind of things is, you know, what giardia can do. And that requires treatment with a special antibiotic if you have it. And I know a few people have had this, and, you know, we're talking that sometimes it can last for months and months and months, and over 6 to 12 months sometimes before they can even get any better. Mm. So the treatment for most of these traveler's diarrhea things, apart from, you know, giardia, is rehydration. So, you know, just rehydrate. If you've got diarrhea, rehydrate. You know, you've got the gastrolyte, you've got the hydrolyte, you've got just normal water as well is good. The other things that people like to take or, you know, use once they're for traveler's diarrhea is loperamide, or otherwise known most commonly as Imodium or Lomotil. These simply just stop the diarrhea, okay? It's, you know, it's convenient to use if you want to get on a plane or a train, you don't want to keep going to the toilet, but it's not a treatment, and it's not normally recommended, although, because it keeps the infection in the body, which means you'll have it for longer, but it does offer that convenience, and I still recommend people take it with them when people ask me, just so, you know, if you've got something to do, it'll get you by instead of always being on the toilet, so to speak. So that helps. Other things for traveling, for nausea. So there's some common brands like Stemitil and Maxilon. You know, these come in tablets and suppositories, and they help with nausea and vomiting, feeling nauseous or vomiting. The antibiotics to take, like we touched on, norfloxacin, or there's something called tinidazole. That's for the actual traveler's diarrhea. Those ones, sometimes you might travel with them depending on where you're going and depending on what your doctor wants to do. One other thing that I really recommend is some travel probiotics. These are becoming more and more available now. So these are specialized travel probiotics, really effective in helping prevent the traveler's diarrhea so you don't get it in the first place. Like I said, highly recommend them. They're available from the pharmacy. There's a few brands, Travelan, the Faldings Travel Mate, or the Bioceuticals, SB Fluoractive, all really good at helping to prevent that travel diarrhea.
Now, this is for the adult. The child should basically just rehydrate, is that right?
Yeah, children, rehydrate. You could give them a probiotic, depending on how sensitive, you know, your children are and where you're going, but otherwise just rehydrate. If they get it, just rehydrate. And obviously being really careful with to try to prevent it.
Now, since there is some myths around diarrhea, and especially the traveler's diarrhea, what should we drink if we experience this, or what should we keep away from, and also eating, what should we eat and not eat?
Okay, so some do's and don'ts, sorry, for prevention. Okay, so drink boiled water is safe. You don't need to boil it for minutes, as it, you know, before they used to say you have to boil it for like 5 minutes or 10 minutes or something. Nah, just as long as it gets to the boil, most of the bacteria is dead, so that's fine. Bottled water is usually safe. Just make sure that the seal of the bottle is not broken, so it's not a refilled bottle if buying it from a street vendor. And chemically disinfected water is safe to drink. And the simplest way to do this is to use iodine-based tablets. They're called like drinking water tablets, which are added to the water before drinking. With these, you must follow the instructions correctly. there's a brand called Aquatabs. So they're these tablets, you put them in water and it cleans the water instantly. Really good for people who are going camping or going on some, you know, major bushwalk somewhere, or you know, and they have no access to running water or clean water or anything like that. Put these tablets in the water and they're cleaned.
What about soft drinks in general? When is that good or bad? Is it a do or don't?
Look, you could. Yeah, the soft drinks, especially the international brands, like the well-known brands, Coke, Pepsi, they're low risk. Yeah, so they're fine to drink. They're okay to drink.
But we should keep away from them anyway. It's not good for us. Keep away from soft drinks.
Yeah. Go the water. The soft drinks are okay. What you shouldn't drink is any other water apart from what we've mentioned there. So tap water is included in that. You shouldn't be drinking that. If you want to be really safe, you just got to assume that all the other waters that we haven't mentioned are not safe. So this includes brushing your teeth. So, you know, they also recommend using bottled water to brush your teeth. Ice is another thing that we tend to forget. You know, we go overseas, it's hot, I'll get me some ice in that drink. But the ice
preserves germs.
Yes, it does. It does. Ice preserves germs. It saves them. Saves them, ready to fight. It doesn't kill them. Yeah, which is you know, boiling is what kills them. The heat will kill them, not the cold.
What should we avoid eating?
Well, we should avoid eating anything that's undercooked, uncooked, or reheated food. So salads or fruit that's not that we can't peel, fruit and veggies that you can't peel, and ice cream, unless it's like an international recognized brand. A Magnum in Australia is going to be as nice as a Magnum in Lebanon, for instance, or somewhere in Africa. And mostly dairy products. So the dairy products overseas, some of them, they don't have the same pasteurization techniques that we use here. Some seafoods like the oysters and the clams and the barbecued prawns and the mud crabs and food that's been left around exposed to flies.
Yes, generally you wouldn't eat that whether you're traveling or not. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, but you know, I know I've been to, I'll mention Egypt because my dad's Egyptian. So you go to Egypt and, you know, the butchers have their meat hanging outside with the flies all over it. I remember the first time I saw it and I said to Dad, "Oh, Dad, like look at the flies all over it." He's like, don't worry. They're used to it here.
True.
We're not, though.
That's true as well.
So when you're traveling, be really careful with that kind of stuff. And, you know, I'm sure, you know, you got to try to limit what you eat off the street. Eating in restaurants is going to be safer. Unless, of course, you know, you've got some prior experience in the country and you're comfortable with the street vendors.
Now, our final point of discussion for tonight, and you mentioned, you know, regarding water, maybe take certain types of tablets with you to disinfect the water or cleanse the water. Now, traveling generally with medication, should we take certain medications with us? Should we not be too paranoid? Should we take the medicine before we leave?
Okay. So, look, if you're planning a trip overseas, organizing your medicine is one of the most important things you can do, especially if you need prescription medicine. And it's always important that you have this medicine with you so, you know, you don't fall sick whilst away. So some practical tips for you is just ensure you have adequate supply of your medicine just in case your travel doesn't go to plan and you face delays. So, you know, these could be reminders for ourselves and our parents and our grandparents and things like that. But, you know, if they're planning to go for 3 months somewhere, take 4 months just in case there's a delay, you know, because our medications aren't always available overseas. And sometimes you might find that they're much more expensive overseas as well.
Yes.
So, you know, if your medicines need to be taken at the same time each day, check if you are crossing time zones and plan accordingly. So, you know, if you got to take your blood pressure medication every day at 9 o'clock in the morning and you're traveling on the plane, you know, you could miss a day if you're not careful with, you know, how you're taking them. So always travel with your medications on the plane with you as well. Rather than putting them in your bag, for always take them on your hand luggage. If you're traveling to a warmer place, just remember that you've got to keep your medications under 25. And you might need a insulated pouch to keep your medicines in. We have something at the pharmacy. We have like bags, like fridge bags that you could use to do that, or
excellent,
things like that. So it's illegal to take PBS medicines out of Australia unless the medicine is for you or your personal use or for the personal use of someone traveling with you.
So what is this PBS?
Okay, a PBS medicine is what we call the Pharmaceutical Benefit Scheme medicine. So that's a medicine that the government pays for, you know, whether you're a pensioner or...
Healthcare card.
Yeah, healthcare card or pensioner. So if you're getting... if you are one of those recipients, you know, you get these medications for cheaper because of those criteria. You need to, you can't just take whatever you want outside the country. You'll need to make sure they're for you, so they'll have to have your name on it, and you can't take out too many out of the country. I think the government just doesn't like paying for it and you going over there to give it to relatives or things like that. Alhamdulillah, in Australia, we have access to a lot of medications, and it's very cheap.
Is that a prescription medicine,
yes,
is it?
Yes, prescription medicine.
So Panamax is safe?
Panamax is fine. You can take as much as you want over
there. As long as it's $1.99, we'll be right.
Yes, every day at the pharmacy, it's $1.99. Don't worry. So if you're planning to take prescription medicines overseas for personal use or for someone who's traveling with you, you'll need to check with the embassies if the countries you're visiting to make sure the medicine is legal there. There's a couple of medications, especially in the Arab world, that are not allowed in the Middle East, that aren't allowed, that is readily available here in Australia. So things like Tramil, it's a painkiller, but in the Middle East it's illegal. So okay. and here it's, and there's no restrictions. Well, it needs a prescription, but it's very readily available. Yeah. You need to carry a letter from your doctor detailing what the medicine is, how much you'll be taking, and stating that medicine is for you, for your personal use, or for the use of someone else. So you'll need to speak to your doctor about that. And you'll need to leave the medication in its original packaging with the pharmacy label on it so it can be identified. Don't pull it out to try to save space. Leave it in the box with your label from the pharmacy that has your name on it and the directions, and you should be fine. Because customs will, they can stop you if they suspect that you are taking too much medicine out of the country, and you know they might suspect you of exporting the medicine, and so you're better off to have the letter doctor just to be safe.
Most important, I'd like to mention before we conclude, is don't forget the travel diet. Don't forget the little book, The Fortress of a Muslim.
Of course.
Or download, you know, any app with diet for travel, as long as they're authentic diet. And remember Allah during your travel, because He's the one who'll keep you safe during your travel and keep illness away from you. These medicines are just things which Allah has allowed for you to use to get better, but everything happens by the will and permission of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Jazakallah khair, that was very beneficial, Brother Saeed. Now before we move on, during the week I actually downloaded or re-downloaded, since I got another phone, the Your Discount Chemist app. Great app. I've got it up now. It's got what, the shop options, the stores, the catalog, the blog, and much more. Now you can email.
Are you finding it easy to use?
Yeah, it's quite easy to use.
Yeah, that's good.
It's quite easy to flick through. You can download the latest catalog, which arrived in my mail a few days ago. So if you haven't received the catalog, 24-page catalog, you can download online. We advise our brothers to download the app, the Your Discount Chemist app, from the Google Play Store and the Apple App Store, or visit the website yourdiscountchemist.com.au, or pay them a visit. Closest store for us is at Greenacre, Baronia Road, in the Coles building there. And meet the friendly staff there, led by our brother Saeed. Any final comments, Brother Saeed?
No, alhamdulillah, all good. Inshallah, look forward to next month.
No, next month, inshallah, Brother Saeed will be on the first Tuesday of the month, bi-idhnillahi ta'ala.
If anyone has a topic they want to bring up, then please email or
media
us.
send us a message on our Facebook page, Al Bayan Radio, or Twitter, Instagram, or send us an email, info@albayan.com.au, or give us a call, 9740-6160. I thank the listeners for tuning in, and I thank Brother Saeed. Jazakumullah khair, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
This program was presented by Al Bayan Radio, the voice of Ahlus Sunnah wal Jama'ah.